Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with Jim Reedy. He's an employment attorney with the Sheehan Finney Bass & Green Law Firm, and he's going to be talking about driving to distraction, benefits, legal pitfalls on remote access, telecommuting, and mobile connections. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com, and today we have one of our favorite guests back, James Reedy, shareholder, employment attorney for Sheehan Finney Bass & Green. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you.
Well, thank you. Hey, you know, we're going to be talking about a topic that is more and more becoming an issue out there for employers. And of course, the title is Driving to Distraction, Benefits, Legal Pitfalls on Remote Access, Telecommuting, and Mobile Connections. I mean, I got to be honest with you, there are very few people I don't know, A, that don't have a mobile connection. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure if you don't have a mobile connection, you're probably, I don't know what you're doing, to be honest with you. I have to think about that for a minute. I don't know anybody that doesn't have a mobile phone. And then the telecommuting part is becoming more and more an issue. We're hearing from our clients every day and trying to figure out how to deal with it, even though it's been around a little while, how to deal with it. What are you seeing in the marketplace out there in terms of the employers you speak with? And if you'd also make a note on that to say, okay, while this has been something we've dealt with for a while, it really has skyrocketed now in the workplace.
Yeah, I think it's a reflection of the evolution of the workplace, not only the technology, but also the physical space. You know, whether you're looking at the Googles of the world or Apple computer or just your standard business, wherever you're located, for-profit, not-for-profit, and the like, because we're also wired and connected, and also because of the hard costs associated with workplaces, the physical space, offices, cubicles, and the like, employers are looking at the most efficient way of delivering the service. So we've seen an increase, certainly, in the last 10 to 15 years of remote access employees, telecommuting, and the like, as we've seen an evolution in the technology available. There's been a little bit of a blip on the screen in recent years, and a question has come up as to whether or not the telecommuting bubble has burst. And we can talk about that in a minute, but I think it will always continue to be with us, meaning remote access, telecommuting workers and the like. The question is how employers plan for it, deal with it, manage it, and so on.
You know, I guess there's a lot of numbers out there going out there, but one of the stats that you provided is that 50% of the U.S. workforce holds a job that is compatible with at least partial telework. That's pretty staggering when you think about it.
Yeah, and I think that, it's a bit lower. The number is, say, 20 to 25% of the workforce, the U.S. workforce, that actually telecommutes or teleworks with some frequency. But if you ask, if you poll your employees, statistics show that 80 to 90% of the workforce says that they would like to telecommute at least part-time.
Yeah, I think there is this discussion, as you had mentioned earlier, where companies are trying to determine if it hurts the culture of an organization or if it helps the employee engagement of an organization, right? Last week on the show, we talked with David Stearns, and he's with, obviously, Dale Carnegie Mann. He talked about employee engagement trends. And trying to keep that culture in there, right, is a big part of understanding the mobile phenomenon.
Right, and I think that, you know, our kids, what they're learning is different from what we learned in the workplace. The workforce that's coming along, you know, perhaps you can say that the large numbers that voted in the Iowa caucus that had never voted before, that's the workforce that's coming along right now. And what are they going to, what are their expectations? Well, their expectations are that they will be wired, meaning using their smartphones and other devices, that they're not going to work the traditional hours that their parents and grandparents worked, and that they're not going to have the traditional attire and even sort of attributes of the workplace that their parents and grandparents had. And I think that in order to attract and recruit and retain those employees, employers are continuing to look at what makes most sense. And the other part of that is engagement, because there's no question that if someone is always on the road or working remotely, their relationship's a bit attenuated. They're not integrated in the workforce. So that's the real challenge for purposes of engagement. How do you keep someone engaged who you don't ever really meet or talk to? They're just always out there. And that's the balancing. While they want that, while that makes sense, how do we keep them connected to us? And there are issues that arise in that regard.
Sure. And, you know, I know that you have some trends that you want to provide in terms of what you're seeing. Why don't you go over some of the summary of trends?
Well, I think there, you know, if we go through sort of the demographics as to who telecommutes right now, the studies show that the typical telecommuter or remote employee is 49 years old, college educated, salaried, non-union employee in a managerial or professional role who earns at least $58,000 to $60,000 per year and works for a company with more than 100 employees. So right there, you talk about whole classes or, of positions or groups of employees that are going to be ruled out, that would not be a traditional telecommuter or remote access employee. And that typically what you're looking at is managerial, professional, sales, or certain types of office workers. That's sort of what you're typically finding, but that, again, that paradigm can change too as the workforce evolves. You've got tech employees that can be working remotely and so on. I mean, it used to be the only remote employees you had were your outside salespeople. They were sort of always on the road. Now, one legal trend that has come up that has lent itself to the telecommuting or remote access because of the availability of technology is a reasonable accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act and state disability laws, whereby someone working from home, it is a reasonable accommodation. Employer looking at the cost and effect upon the organization. What you're not finding is a lot of sort of non-exempt, meaning hourly or lower-level employees working from home, unless it's like a sick child or special circumstances. So. And you're also finding larger companies are the ones who can likely accommodate that. Well, you would think a smaller company would want to keep the cost down and they would tolerate the employees working remotely. That is actually, the statistics don't really bear that out. So among the non-self-employed population, there's an interesting trend developing in the recent years. Since 2005, the number of people working from home in the American workforce has grown by 103%. In 2014, that number increased by 6.5%, which is the largest increase since the recession. And if you put that in numbers, if you have, you know, we have a population of 325 million, and you say you have 180 million actively working, 3.7 million employees, which is about 2.5% of the American workforce, now work from home at least half time.
Wow. You know, when you think about that, half time. That's a lot when you really consider how much they're working from home at this point.
Right, and I think that it's important to distinguish that group from the self-employed, because typically the self-employed would be someone who would have a home office, whether it's, you know, selling cosmetics or doing real estate sales or, you know, consulting and things of that nature. That group, there's no question that most of those people in those professions where they're self-employed would certainly work from home. But the interesting thing about that is in recent years, that population has declined. The number of self-employed people working from home, and that's attributable to the decline in home-based businesses, which declined about 9.8% since the Great Recession in 07 and beyond.
So what do you think is the potential bottom line impact at this point?
You know, when you're looking at the bottom line, this is what a lot of employers are looking at. Again, with the hard costs of real estate and utilities and the like. And by the way, there was an experiment, just like in education back in the 70s, the open classroom. Employers went to the sort of the open concept in the workplace, and people couldn't focus because it was too scattered and too sort of hectic. So employers that said, well, we like this concept and we don't want to have the rigidity of offices and walls, they went to the cubicles. And still, I mean, again, part of that was cost saving, part of that was sort of cultural issues. But employers continue to look at these things. And one of the studies that favors people working remotely or telecommuting and so on is that if those incomparable jobs desire to work from home, and they did so half-time, which is, again, roughly the national average, the national savings would be over $700 billion per year, meaning that the typical business would save $11,000 per person per year. Telecommuters could save between, say, $2,000 and $7,000 per year in their commuting costs and the like. The oil savings, apart from the most recent drop in foreign oil, which we all appreciate at the pump and for heating oil purposes, would equate to 37% of our foreign oil imports would actually decrease. Greenhouse gas reductions, for those that are focused in that regard, the statistics say that by current workforce working half the time from home, greenhouse gas reduction would basically be as if you took the entire state of New York workforce off the road permanently. And that's pretty significant. And then if you look at government workers, which some government workers do work from home, the Congressional Budget Office said that they looked at a five-year cost implementation of a telework throughout the government, which would cost about $30 million, but that is less than a third of the cost of lost productivity from a single-day shutdown of the federal government in Washington due to snow, which is approximately $100 million. And, of course, we know that Congress was shut down for a couple of days. So, you know, that you figure hundreds of millions of dollars, where it would be about $30 million if the government allowed certain workers to work from home at least half-time.
You know, it's interesting when you think about it that it's a bigger issue than people sometimes think it is. And companies look at these things and they say to themselves, well, how does it really affect me, right? You know, what are the characteristics of things I need to think about when I'm dealing with these issues? It's not just the telecommuting. It's not just a simple laptop or something like that, or even a smartphone. What are some of the things that you look at and you say, these are the areas that people have to think about when they're talking about remote access, when they're talking about telecommuting, or even the mobile connection?
Sure. I mean, there are many. I mean, I think that you can look at, for employer and individual employee, what are some of the characteristic or attributes. It would be things like, well, telecommuting would be, again, typical for sales positions, but increasingly a number of other positions like computer professionals, technicians, design, creative designers, marketing, customer service, and others. And other professionals are working from home. But so what does working from home mean, or working remotely, like at your neighborhood Starbucks? It means that, you know, the employer would perhaps give them a laptop or allow them use of their laptop and access to the employer system. But some of the issues that come up with that are immediately compatibility of the individual or employee's laptop with the computer system, firewall issues, viruses, spam, etc., and also about certain inappropriate uses. And then the other thing that comes up is, of course, the Wi-Fi connection, as to whether or not it's a secure Wi-Fi, not talking about secure email, because, of course, that's in the headlines these days, too, but that would be an important issue because of the information, perhaps, that's being transferred from a remote location to the employer and elsewhere, as to whether or not that could be hacked or picked up by another source. Cell phone use, smartphones, basically the same thing, because our smartphones are basically small laptops and other devices are similar. Some of the things that are helpful, of course, would be video conferencing and remote desktop. And I always smile when I think of that. When you have video conferencing, you've got the employee who looks like he or she is wearing business attire, but below that they're wearing shorts or pajama bottoms. And then other devices. You know, until such time that we have drones or microchips in our molars, basically there are some devices out there that are actually going to monitor and track everything from mileage to travel to other work activities, because there is a concern. It's a trust issue that we'll talk about in a minute, but there's a continue to be a trust issue, sort of out of sight, out of mind. And there's a term when some managers talk about work from home, they call it shirk from home, basically believing that nobody's really working all that hard.
Well, you know, we're going to be getting into the legal ramifications of this and all the issues that get along with this. We're talking with Jim Reedy. He is a employment attorney with Sheehan, Finney, Bass & Green. We are listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Today, we're talking with Jim Reedy. He's an employment attorney at Sheehan Finney Bass & Green, a great HR Power Hour sponsor and a great guy. Yes, that's right, Jim. You're even a great guy. Believe it or not, I said attorney and great guy in the same sentence.
Could you tell my wife?
Well, let her listen to the show. She'll hear it directly, okay? No problem. So let's talk about the legal issues as we are relating them to the remote access. Let's start there. And, of course, we're talking today about driving to distraction, benefits, legal pitfalls on remote access, telecommuting, and mobile connections. So as I said, Jim, let's talk about the legal issues related to remote access itself first.
Sure, and I think that the legal issues, some are obvious, some are a bit more obscure. And so the first would be, okay, you've got employees spread around the region or even nationally or even internationally. And most employment laws are based upon the number of employees an employer has. By way of example, the Family Medical Leave Act, wage and hour law, workers' comp law, discrimination laws, and the like. And the question is whether or not they are counted, your remote employee, from the, say, the mothership or the headquarters, as to whether or not you're covered by or they're covered based upon where they're living and working from home in an employee count. And the answer is, one of my favorite answers in the law, it depends. And the example we use under the Family Medical Leave Act, of course, is a threshold number of 50 employees, but that's within a 75-mile radius of the place where you're counting. So if you've got that remote employee, say your offices are in, say, southwestern New Hampshire, or we'll use that as an example, and you've got a remote employee in Connecticut, if that's more than 75 miles away, then that person is not counted for purposes of the FMLA. However, in most states, for purposes of workers' comp law, wage and hour law, and so on, all you need is one employee to be counted. And then the issue comes up is, okay, but what law applies? For unemployment, wage and hour, workers' comp, if the person is injured and it arises out of work, and that's not just someone working from home, that could be someone on the road traveling for you, is it a covered event? And the issue for workers' comp is, did it arise out of employment, whether it's in the person's home, whether it's at a vendor's offices, it's on the road, at a coffee shop, and so on. If it arose out of employment, it is likely covered. And then the question is, what state law applies? And the answer is, where did it occur? Where's the person domiciled, and where's the company located? But that like unemployment claims, usually sorts itself out pretty quickly. Wage and hour law, sometimes you'll have issues of people doing forum shopping, meaning if you had an employee, say, in Seattle or San Francisco where they have a higher minimum wage or they have certain unique laws and you're located in a state where that is not the case, does that apply? And the answer could very well be yes. The person may get the benefit of where they live and if they're working from home. And then discrimination laws, usually pretty straightforward because it doesn't matter where the person is working and located. If they are an employee of the company as opposed to an independent contractor, likely counted. So that's the coverage issue as to whether or not certain laws apply and whether or not the person is counted as an employee. Other issues that are pretty important are things like hours worked. And you think, well, what's that problem? Well, that's when you're counting the hours for a non-exempt, salaried non-exempt, or an hourly employee. If they're working from home or they're out of sight, meaning on the road and the like, how do you count their hours of work? Because the employer has the obligation to keep a record, accurate record of all hours worked for every workday. Well, if the person's on the road and traveling or working from home, how do you know whether they're working or not? And the problem is, with remote access or just access in general, people can work ridiculous hours. And so the challenge for employers is setting a schedule, requiring the person to work those set hours and record their time on a daily basis, and also let you know in advance, if possible, when they're working additional time. Distracted drivers is a big issue because most state laws, New Hampshire being one, and I think Massachusetts is entertaining increasing their statutory protections against distracted drivers, but it's everything from putting on your lipstick to reading the paper to, you know, attending to the radio to, the, of course, being on cell phones, smartphones, and the like. That's all distracted driver issues, and it's a hefty fine in most states that have those, where you cannot, you know, be on your cell phone. You have to be hands-free and the like. A new area of the law that is actually, or a new phenomenon rather, that's being recognized is distracted walking. Any large city, when you're walking along, people with their heads down looking at their cell phones. And there have been a number of workplace accidents recently, claims at least, where people have walked into cars, walked into signs, and so on. So
I'm sure they're looking at their cell phones at this point.
Yeah. We actually have videotape because we're dealing with a case like that right now where the person had her head down and walked into a sign, and she claimed a workplace accident. And, of course, there's a term in the law called detour and frolic, and that's the theory we're using, which is, look, this was, you didn't rise out of employment. You were doing something, God knows what, on your cell phone, your smartphone, and the employer shouldn't be responsible for your silliness. There are conduct concerns. Right now, the statistics out from the EEOC say one out of every three or one-third of all sex harassment claims originate electronically, whether we're talking about sexting or inappropriate comments and the like. And if the person feels a bit more relaxed working from home or working remotely, they're more inclined perhaps to send something that's a little bit risque. And, of course, if they're using the employer system, while the employer can monitor, the employer is also on notice of that bad behavior and potentially could be liable for any claims of discrimination. Workplace safety, and this is something, David, you and I have talked about before. A few years ago, OSHA was seeing we were seeing a trend, and OSHA proposed home safety visits to look at home offices for employees that were working remotely. You know, thankfully, that didn't materialize because God knows if OSHA came into my home office, they'd have issues with you know, extension cords and the like. And I don't need one more person nagging me about being neat. So. Thankfully, that didn't occur, and therefore employers didn't have to investigate or remedy. However, the issue that comes up is, again, if the employee is working remotely, off-site in any location, and is injured, he or she has to report that to the employer because the question is whether or not it arose out of employment.
Well, and it certainly also applies if that equipment could be company equipment, too, in the person's home. So that certainly even makes it a bigger issue in terms of that.
Right, and I think the issue there is, you know, if it's a known hazard, what is it's the employer's obligation to correct it, right? A certain national product recently, of course, a notice that just came out on that on charging your smartphones, a product that rhymes with Apple, had an issue with their plugs, and it was a fire hazard. So I think that that is certainly something that employers might want to take a look at as well, whether it's their equipment or the employee's equipment, compatibility, safety, and the like. Privacy issues come up with regard to employees. There are at least two states that I'm aware of, Colorado and New York, that says you cannot penalize an employee for off-duty conduct. And again, looking at the hours of work, what is off-duty if the person has remote access and will send a text or an email? And the issue that comes up there is, you know, how far can an employer search the employee's phone or computer and the like, again, assuming that that employee has access to the employer's system, the answer is computer system and telephone system. The answer is employers can, under federal and state law, search sent, received, and stored messages. However, they have to give notice to employees. And further, there's a development called BYOD, which is bring your own device. I'm using my Apple smartphone for purposes of access to my law firm's computer system. But it also has certain confidential information on that. If I were to leave my workplace, My employer has a policy, as a lot of employers do, where they can remotely wipe company, firm, confidential information from that device without me ever having to bring it in. And that's an important policy for employers to have,
you know, Jim,
putting employees on notice of that.
You know, Jim, if I can just segue into that for just a second, one of the questions that's come up, and I've heard certainly attorneys and HR people talking about this, whether or not companies should really think about providing their own phones or having everybody bring their own device. And there's a lot of debate between back and forth as to which is the best way to do it or which protects the company better. What is your take on that option?
It really depends upon the company. I mean, the benefits would be we've got one smartphone, let's say, because that's what we're certainly talking about, because we're getting away from flip phones.
Correct.
but one smartphone that we are certain of that we might get a deal on, because a lot of the national providers provide deals if you're a corporate purchase and the like. And I'm not dealing with compatibility issues because everybody has the same generation smartphone. That makes sense. The on the flip side of that coin, you have an issue but the person is then using that as their phone, their device, and it's personal use. You run into not only data and phone charge uses that you have to then sort out what's business and what's personal, but the other issue is when I'm using it for personal uses and whether that migrates into the workplace, and that goes back to the conduct issues we talked about a little while ago.
Yeah, it's just an interesting question that continues to be a challenge, right, for employers as they go back and forth between deciding what to do. Because employees would like to use one phone. They don't really want to have two. But at the same time, they just don't know which way to go. But just wanted your intake on it.
Again, we have a national figure running for office who was using two different cell phones, and which is actually fairly common in government service, where either it's a BlackBerry or another smartphone, and the problems with that are, you know, again, as we've seen, it gets a bit complicated. But again, there are complications when they're using just one device that is issued by the employer. And again, if they're using their own personal device, then there are issues associated with, again, BYOD and so on.
We're talking with Jim Reedy from the law firm Sheehan Finney Bass and Green. He's an employment attorney. We're talking about the legal issues related to remote access. Jim, I know you had a couple more that you wanted to share.
Yeah, and just very quickly, one of the issues that's come up with my clients in recent years is I've got this employee, say a sales employee or someone at a managerial level, who's left the company. And I'm concerned that he or she may have misappropriated confidential or proprietary information. How do I get it back? And it's on our phone, but we can't retrieve the phone. And, of course, BYOD is helpful because of wiping that out. But that's an important issue because when employees get access, you increase the chances of the misuse of either the employee's misuse or somehow they mishandle it and someone else misuse that information that may be critical to your business. And then finally, the other legal issue that comes up is the employer's ability to monitor the employee's sent, received, and stored messages, and it is critical under federal and state wiretap laws that the employer put the employee on notice and that they will indeed monitor the activities and that what they do then with that information. And the most important part there beyond the policies is make sure your supervisors and managers understand the policy and they don't create their own separate different policy saying to the employees, don't worry about it. I understand what the handbook says, but as far as I'm concerned, you can do this or that. That's when you get into real problems.
Again, we're talking with Jim Reedy. He is an employment attorney with Sheehan Finney Bass and Green. We're talking about driving to distraction, benefit, legal pitfalls on remote access, telecommuting, and mobile connections. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Jim Reedy. He is the employment attorney, and I do mean the employment attorney at Sheehan Finney Bass and Green. He's the man to call. Okay, is that a good push out for you, Jim? Is that
boy? It sounds just like Ghostbusters. I like that.
The man, the guy. We're talking about driving to distraction, benefits, legal pitfalls on remote access, telecommuting, and mobile connections. You know, during the break, my phone even blipped, and I'm immediately distracted. Right to it. I went right to my phone because the light came on it. Isn't that amazing how it does distract you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, with my kids, and I've got four kids, and they're between high school and college, and the biggest issue, and my wife and I have talked about this for years, is we wonder if our kids, because of these devices or otherwise in the developing brains, is whether or not that we're the attention span of our future employees is going to be like the attention span of either a gnat or a cat looking at a shiny object, just jumping from thing to thing. And well, therefore, you worry about productivity, right?
No, it's true. It's true. It's bite-sized chunks, right? Bite-sized chunks. So we've been talking about the legal issues related to remote access. Now I want to talk about the employer policies themselves. Let's get into some meat and potatoes here a little bit. So talk a little bit about the policies that can be affected by the driving to distraction.
You know, a number of things that come up. I think we mentioned earlier that the accommodation issue has been one, and there have been a number of cases in recent years, especially under the Americans with Disabilities Act, where it might be an accommodation for the employee to work from home. And, of course, that's assuming the person's disabled. That's a person who can still, with this reasonable accommodation, perform the essential functions of the job. But the question there is, or the issue there is, you must treat every person separately, even if it's a back injury again and you've had several back injuries or something, a carpal tunnel and the like. Each case is to be treated separately, an individualized assessment. It's a part of what's called the interactive process. A part of that is you looked at the cost and effect upon the organization for the person working remotely, whether it's issuing the person with equipment or setting up their access, or how many hours they're going to work and the nature of their job and so on, because not every job certainly can be done remotely. The other issues that come up are, again, who has access and to what extent. Now, we hear this in the workplace all the time, but so-and-so is allowed to work from home, and I know that you allow this whole group of employees to do this or that, and therefore, since you denied me, it must be discrimination, and that's not necessarily the case. So you have to look at the cost and effect. So it's not only just accommodation for the disabled, but you might also have a woman who's returning from maternity leave who for a period of time wants to ease back into the workplace and work part-time from home and so on. You have to look at what's the basis for our approval or our denial, because, again, this could be the genesis of a claim. Hours of work are an important issue as well. I think we mentioned this earlier with regard to timekeeping. Employers must be clear about the hours of work, their timekeeping obligation to the employee, and if the person's going to work additional hours, whether or not they have approval in advance, because you could have an overtime issue. You also have issues with regard to reporting, everything from the time issues to, again, workplace accidents. If the person is on the road for you and he or she lost their license, that's kind of important to know, because that could be an insurance or liability issue. And if they're having equipment problems, or if they're say the laptop they're using is out of date, and therefore the malware or spyware is out of date, well, you would want to know that. So with the obligation under your employer policies to put them on notice. And a few other policies very quickly would be monitoring, making it clear to your employees that you can indeed monitor their sent, received, and stored messages. You can inspect their equipment, and if it's your equipment, you can ask to get it back. And I've had many cases like that. The BYOD policy we referred to earlier, which is, you know, the employer can remotely wipe confidential information, and the design or the issue there is that, well, when you wiped my smartphone, you knocked out my family photos from vacation, and those were important to me. And so the notice in the policy is, just be aware we can do this, and we are not liable for other things on that device that may be caught up in the remote wipe. So be careful or save them elsewhere. And then finally, with regard to expense reimbursement, it sounds trivial, but it's kind of important with regard to everything from the cost of carrying the phone or smartphone to maintenance issues with regard to the equipment, and also just simply travel. what's acceptable for purposes of business reimbursement and what's not. And then one that was sort of comes to mind was a large national credit card company a few years ago had an issue with an executive who went to strip clubs and used his company-issued credit card and submitted those to the company for reimbursement. And his explanation was, I go to these strip clubs to entertain our clients, and that's a business expense. Being clear that as to what's acceptable and what's not.
I don't have a response for that. I'm just going to let that one go at this point. I'm just going to let that go, I think. So, you know, those are really good policies to look at and things that obviously have to be made clear. But one of the things you stated in the first segment was some of the latest trends about telecommuting that maybe actually the bubble's bursting on it. What are you seeing? And certainly we all know about Yahoo, a big discussion about Yahoo that happened in 2013. We can talk a little bit about that, but what's some of the other things that you're seeing about these things happening and where it's starting to come back home to roost a little?
Yeah, and I think just before we get to that, just one last thought with regard to employer policies, because this is something I know, David, you advise your clients on. When you've got your employees who have remote access, what do you do with, how do you communicate your employer policies? So the policies we just talked about, how do you get them out there? And I think there are a number of things. In other words, do they have to have them posted if they're working from home in their home? No, they don't, but the employer should be aware of what laws apply to where that person lives and works. And what they have to give them notice of. But, you know, some of the things that work would be intranet access and other employer sort of e-policies that are posted, but making clear through portals that the employee actually has access to, so he or she knows where to, everything from file reports to file complaints and the like. So I think that's a good point, and that's something to mention with regard to those remote employees. So the remote employees, that some of the trends, and the question is whether or not the bubble has burst. That was certainly a question that came up post-recession, Great Recession, and we still really haven't climbed out of that completely from 07, 09. And, you know, some of the companies, I think you referenced Yahoo. Yahoo made a determination that they were going to start bringing people back physically into the workplace. And the I think Best Buy followed suit. Best Buy had a policy known as row, which is results-only work environment program. And basically that allowed employees to work from home, get this, where and when they wanted without seeking prior permission.
Gotta love that, don't you?
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, what's the old adage? Why do you think they call it work? you know,
right.
And this is someone sort of really sort of softening that determination. But that sort of Yahoo and Best Buy, some of the studies that came up, including one from the University of Minnesota, found that, and I think there was another one, by the way, Hewlett-Packard announced they were discouraging remote access as well. So the question was, has the tide turned? Did we see the height of workplace flexibility or remote access and so on? And some of the studies that came out, like from the University of Minnesota, were that actually what they found was oftentimes employers pulled back, which was a reaction to a decline in profits or the company failing to meet its organizational goals. So it was almost like a knee-jerk reaction if the company wasn't doing as well, being less liberal about their policies.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I'm sure you see some of the generational trends, certainly the millennial trend, this has been huge. But if you talk to a lot of the Gen Z, which is the brand new generation obviously coming up through the workforce, and they're just around 18, 17, 18, they're actually talking about wanting to go back to work, that they actually want to be part of a culture, be part of an organization. It's an interesting shift in regards to what we're hearing.
Yeah, and I think it could very well be. I think the other issue that's come up is, you know, what was the issue in the 90s and early 2000s, the casual Fridays and the relaxed workforce, and they're actually seeing a trend where employers are getting away from that, because when people wore sort of the khakis and the polo shirt or even jeans and sneakers and flip-flops, whether or not they're as productive or they've lost certain formalities in the workplace, and with that sort of, not necessarily a work ethic, but the adherence to policies, because it was just too relaxed.
So as we look at talking about this very important topic, and again, we're talking with Jim Reedy. He is the employment attorney at Sheehan Finney Bass & Green, And we've been talking about driving to distraction, benefits, legal pitfalls on remote access, telecommuting, and mobile connections. Jim, what are some of the real strong best practices that you, when you think, okay, these are things that employers really need to do to deal with these issues?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that looking at all the literature and based upon our collective experiences, I think certainly providing a suitable training and technology makes perfect sense. Meaning, you can't have a manager necessarily who's managing a remote employee unless he or she has been trained and understands how to not only the technology but also how to manage someone who's not sitting, in their direct line of sight, and how to collaborate when you've got someone working remotely and so on, and what's an effective way of doing that. Creating appropriate performance matrix. So it would be something along the lines of how do I measure everything from attendance to performance to reaching goals when someone, again, is not located where I'm located. Establishing regular times for discussion and brainstorming, really kind of important. You talked about onboarding, integration, and enabling or encouraging work, and that would be important too, because that way the person doesn't feel truly isolated. Communicate regularly, keeping telecommuters in the loop so they feel like they're a part of the team and the team feels connected to them. Scheduling regular visits to the work site. We actually have a lawyer in our office who commutes from San Francisco, and we have offices in New Hampshire and in Massachusetts, so he commutes every couple of weeks. We had a partner who commuted from Florida, and we had another one from the Carolinas. That is getting to be fairly common, but you also want to stay connected with them and that you have access to them and they have access to you. Informal interactions such as, it's going to sound silly and trite, but wishing someone happy birthday on their birthday. Again, a way of staying connected with those employees who you don't see every day. And what your expectations are with regard to the worker's schedule and availability. Nothing's more frustrating when you're trying to reach someone who's not in the office and you can't get them. You get their voicemail or they don't respond to your email and the like, because what's your first reaction? Well, they must be goofing off. And then selecting workers who not only that their job makes sense, but they're self-starters and they'll be motivated and they'll be productive. Because work from home is not for everyone, and I will tell you sort of my experience. I can't work from home, one, because everything from my dog to tasks around the house that I think I can get to, or just simply being interrupted by family members who might be at home at the time, the allure of television or something along those lines. It's something that it doesn't work for everyone.
Now, my allure is that refrigerator. That's sure. The allure. That's the big problem, right? At home, it's just there. Everything's in front of you, and anything can distract you. And it takes somebody who can actually have true self-discipline to be able to, departmentalize, if you want to say those things.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. And I think that, and again, managers understanding that and staying in touch with and managing that relationship. And because ultimately you spend a lot of money recruiting and training, and you want to retain the valued employees.
We're talking with Jim Reedy. He is the employment attorney at Sheehan Finney Bass & Green. And I use the word the employment attorney because he's one of many, but he's the top one as far as I'm concerned. We're talking about driving to distraction, benefits, legal pitfalls on remote access, telecommuting, and mobile connections. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB, presented by CMAcareer.com. And today we're talking with Sheehan Finney Bassin Greens, Jim Reedy, employment attorney. And we're talking about driving to distraction, benefits, legal pitfalls on remote access, telecommuting, and mobile connections. Jim, we've had a great discussion today, from everything from best practices to some of the trends that are happening out there in the industry. What if an organization is thinking to themselves, okay, I want to create a program that works for us. I want to make sure that our policies, our practices, our everything kind of all works together. What are some of the things that you say you need to think about to make it a successful arrangement?
I think that what you do, David, is you think about, first of all, your organization and how do we work? How do we exchange information and ideas, not only through technology, but person to person? We also think about functions. We think about how one department works with another. Then we also think about individuals. If we have the technology, if the person is so inclined or has requested, or we would like the person to work remotely, how is that going to work? How many hours? What's involved with the technology setup and access? What are our expectations, and how will we manage that relationship, not only manager to remote employee, but also how are we going to measure performance? And I think the other issue that comes up is with regard to your managers. We are not going to send employees out into the wild blue yonder without any training. So you're going to train both the employees about the technology they'll be using, and also you're going to, for purposes of sort of secondary onboarding, it will be, you know what it was like to work here, but when you're working there, meaning on the road or, you know, in the car, on a plane, in a train, in a hotel, at home, and the like, what our expectations are, not only with the use of our technology, but also the safeguards that we're going to build into place, but also what we expect of you, when you'll check in, what you'll provide, and when.
Yeah, I think that's critical, isn't it? Because, you know, I know most supervisors and most owners don't necessarily have a problem with people being out there and commuting and doing what they need to do. But they do get all worked up if they can't reach somebody or they don't know where they are or why they're not responding. That's where the trouble arises.
Right. And I think that one of the issues that comes up in that regard is that employers will then often result to the worst case scenario. And I've had situations where employers actually went on social media to figure out what the person was doing. And when they saw pictures on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and otherwise, seeing the person goof off, the assumption is they're doing that all the time. And that can be something that comes up in everything from a workers' comp case to just a performance evaluation, or even worse yet, if someone they believe is stealing from the company, exporting company information and so on. So I think understanding what the rules of the game are and managing expectations on both ends, both the employee and the employer, makes perfect sense. I think that a telecommuting program, a remote access program, can certainly be a real benefit to employers. The statistics actually bear that out, not only from a cost, but also from a morale standpoint. Some people prefer to or need to work remotely from time to time, and sometimes it's ongoing. I prefer to live in Idaho, but I'm going to be a very productive employee as long as you let me have access this way. That may work, but I think you have to look at the job, you have to look at the technology, you have to look at the integration issues, and then also just how you're going to cultivate and manage that relationship. And if you have your eye on in that regard, it can be a successful either program or individual situation.
You know, this does take effort, doesn't it? I mean, I think sometimes people think it's easy. Right? Hey, we'll just set this all up, go out and do what you need to do and get stuff done. But it does take effort on not only the manager's part, but the leaders and the organization's part.
Right. And again, you're looking at measurable goals and achievements. And so not just simply dealing with, you know, we're going to allow you to work from home and so on and good luck, but we really want it to be something where it works to our benefit as well as yours. And again, some of the negative perceptions that you have out there are someone's going to be goofing off from home, or we're concerned about what they're going to do because they're out of sight. And so it does take work. It does take attention. It does take sort of, I hate the expression, but truly thinking outside the box.
You know, at the end of the day, in today's market, this can be one of the big things that companies need to land a candidate, right? I mean, so we do need to take it very seriously.
Yeah, and you would know this from your business, certainly. I mean, CMA is a leader in this area for purposes of helping companies find the right person and the like. But you're seeing, I'm sure, that especially with the not only the new generation coming along, but you can also have people in their 40s, 50s, and perhaps even beyond that, that prefer to a certain type of lifestyle and work and work arrangement. So telecommuting can be that carrot the company needs to land that best candidate.
No, there's no question. And we're even seeing it when you're talking about the older generation because of taking care of senior care. You know, let's be honest, today that's one of the biggest trends that we're seeing in terms of they're taking care of their kids, but they also have to take care of their parents. And it's really become a big issue in terms of flex time to allow that to happen.
Yeah, and I think SHRM, Society for Human Resource Management, identified that in recent years because they were sort of the leading advocate for workplace flexibility. And again, it wasn't focused just upon the younger generation, nor was it focused upon the mother returning from maternity leave or the person who's returning from a workplace accident or illness. It was also looking, as you pointed out, David, the sandwich generation, those taking care of kids and those taking care of elderly parents and other relatives. So, yeah, it ultimately gets to, look, how can we work together for the benefit of the company and how can I keep you engaged? And it does require that extra effort, but in the end, when it works, it can work really well.
And to that end, as we wrap up here with 1 minute to go, but kind of summarize where you see the conclusion of all of this and how it really can relate to an organization.
I think in the end, you can say, David, that there's no denying that the workplace is ever evolving, and employers who want to survive and hopefully thrive in this ever-changing marketplace have to make the very best use of their resources, meaning not only their employees but their technology. So telecommuting and remote work will always be a part of our workplace, and perhaps more so than ever before, so in one form or another. Employers just need to find the right jobs, the right employees, and the right circumstances to make that arrangement work for all concerned, but especially for the business.
Jim, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. Again, Jim Reedy, he is an employment attorney with Sheehan Feeney Bass and Green. Of course, you can go to HR Power Hour right after this show. You can not only see his bio and information, connect with him directly. You can hear, of course, this segment if you miss part of it. Also, please click on the Sheehan Feeney Bass and Green website logo, as they are a wonderful sponsor of the HR Power Hour, which we truly appreciate. Jim, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, David.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And now we're going to provide you a tip of the week.
So, tip of the week. It's February. It's also the month of Valentine's Day, the holiday of lovers and the like. Perfect opportunity for employers, if you have not done sex harassment training in the last year or so, to revisit it. That means revisit your policy, revisit your training, look at your professional conduct policy, your complaint procedure, and also helping to avoid retaliation.
And that's the HR Tip of the Week, provided by Jim Reedy from Sheehan Finney Bass and Green. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m., or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.